Scientists across the world are racing against time to find out more about the Omicron variant of the coronavirus, and there are many challenges. One of them is that the Omicron variant has highlighted the uneven genomic sequencing worldwide. Numerous public health experts and agencies around the world, including the WHO, have held that sequencing is likely to be key in the world's fight against the Omicron variant, or for that matter, for any variant. So where does India stand when it comes to genome sequencing, the tool that is needed to identify new coronavirus strains? Joining us now, we have Gautam Menon, a professor of physics and biology at the Ashoka University, who's worked on modeling outbreaks. And we have Dr. V. Ravi, nodal officer for genome sequencing in the government of Karnataka, a member of the International Advisory Board of the Sputnik vaccine, a retired senior professor, head of Department of Neurovirology at NIMHANS. Gautam Menon, to you first. Genome sequencing is crucial to detecting new variants of the coronavirus. Where does India stand when compared to other nations?
I think currently the INSACOG effort probably does somewhere between, I'm not sure the numbers, between 8,000 and 12,000 sequences a month. And Dr. Ravi would probably know a better number for that. That depends very much on, currently at a point where cases are coming down, it's possible to get away with smaller levels of sequencing. But now potentially with the worry about the new Omicron variant, one might have to suddenly ramp that capacity up and possibly involve other players other than just the government-sponsored labs, which are part of INSACOG.
All right. So the identification of Omicron is testament to the importance of a broad genomic surveillance. It's really a good point now, I think, to highlight the efforts of the South African scientists who first identified and reported it. And without them, really, the world would not have been able to prepare for what is perhaps to come. So let's first actually just take a look at the state of India's genome sequencing, right? There are first and foremost only 38 government and private labs which are part of the genome sequencing consortium. Even though the government had committed to sequencing 5% of confirmed cases, we only have around, I think, 2% of cases being sequenced so far. 36 of India's samples come only from two states, Maharashtra and Kerala. What is the significance of this? What are the implications of this? Let's continue with our discussion. Dr. Ravi, does India need to bolster our COVID-19 genome sequencing efforts to avoid what we saw happen a year ago during the second wave, a repeat of that Delta-fueled wave of infections that really saw our health system close to collapse earlier this year?
Thank you, Sarah, for having me on the show. I have a different take on genome sequencing. The purpose of genome sequencing is to identify emergence of new variants and to monitor variations in the existing variants. To that extent, I would say India has done very well. INSACOG was established on 22nd December last year. By 26th December at Bangalore and at Pune, we have already identified emergence of alpha variant. People seem to forget that the Delta variant was a contribution from INSACOG and Indian sequencing. Agreed, if we have the resources, the manpower, and the infrastructure, we can have 1,000 genome labs. Hmm. We can do 100,000 genomic sequences per day, like what some of the developed nations do. But in my opinion, 2% is not bad. I'm not saying it is ideal. I mean, we can have a separate debate on what is ideal and what is not ideal. Omicron was described to the world on 26 November, and here Karnataka identifies within the next 5 days. Now we know Omicron is in the country. We will step up sequencing. But remember, sequencing is not a routine diagnostic test like PCR. People have absolutely no idea what is the amount of work that goes behind sequencing, the enormous amount of resources that are poured in, and the biggest hurdle to sequencing is humongous amount of data that's generated out of sequencing that needs analysis and that takes time. Hmm. Yes, I would love to see India doing more sequencing, but I'm not willing to accept the argument India is very bad in sequencing. No, I would not accept that. Oh.
Mr. Menon, Dr. Ravi basically saying that we don't need that 5%. That would have been a very ambitious target to meet, and perhaps the government shouldn't have made that, declared that in the first place. But he's saying 2% even is enough. So by that, I'm guessing that what is important is to be strategic in how sampling is being done. Is that even the case in India right now?
My guess is not, that I think really sampling is dominated by a small number of states, and we don't have enough samples from states where potentially you could have a high case load, but you would miss it if there are any new variants. And I think both Maharashtra and Kerala do a lot of sequencing, Karnataka too. I worry a little bit that everything that we know is biased by the information from those states, and we have less information from other states where potentially things could be happening. That certainly is a concern.
So, Dr. Ravi, then address that point, please. The fact here is, like I said, 36% of India samples are coming only from two states. There's Maharashtra, Kerala, Karnataka, where you are working, also doing well. So, you have states like Bihar, Madhya Pradesh. What happens to states like that where we have such large populations? The fact that data on the Delta variant was detected in Maharashtra, and that largely emerged from the UK, not from India last year.
The Delta variant, I'm afraid, was first reported from India. It might have emerged from UK, but globally it was first reported from India. Why these states are being overrepresented? For two reasons. One, they have a large number of cases. Kerala and Maharashtra have, over the last 1.5 years, shared the major burden of COVID cases in India. So their governments have been very proactive. And they have set up sequencing facility, and they have tied up with outside of INSACOG with other sequencing agencies or with existing sequencing labs. Karnataka is ramping up sequencing. Agreed, all states are not equally represented, but the framework exists. Every state has been tied to a sequencing lab. Pull up the states if they're not sending the samples. Why pull up INSACOG? We wait for samples. In the last 6 months, the sad story is we are waiting for samples. We have the capacity to do 384 at a time or 96 at a time. We get samples in the INSACOG labs, get samples over a week or 15 days. We meet the 96 because there are criteria for taking a sample for sequencing. Its CT values have to be less than 30, ideally less than 25. Not every PCR positive sample meets the criteria. You cannot get a sequence in every PCR positive sample.
No, I understand. You know, there are many, many complications. This is an extremely challenging exercise, but it is one that needs to be done, whether we're talking about costs, whether we're talking about how it takes so much time. And like you point out, you don't get enough, if a laboratory doesn't get enough samples to sequence together in one go, it may not even be able to sequence what it is at a time when time is of essence. So Gautam Menon, to you, wind up this debate on the importance of genome sequencing. It's not about blaming the organization responsible for this, but it's about whether there is a perception in India, whether there is an understanding, whether the scientific community's voice, where they've been pushing for genomic sequencing, has actually reached the ears of the government.
So let me just agree with Dr. Ravi about the fact that we do need more coordination between the states and the center in terms of collecting samples. There is certainly a lag there in sort of getting the right metadata that accompanies these samples. It's not just sequencing. We'd like to know what happened to those patients. So we need clinical information that correlates with the sequence as well. Now, with the Omicron variant coming in and the need to identify, is there community transmission, at what scale, how many people have it? We need to do more sequencing to find out what is the nature of this variant, how fast it is spread. This is now where we will feel the pinch a little bit, I feel. And this is where we do need larger amounts of sequencing. We do need more coordination between the center and the states. We do need more ammunition within INSACOG.
All right. So then, what is the solution at this point of time, given all the certainty? Are the vaccines the only real protection that we have against the spread of the Omicron variant? Let's expand this discussion. Let's bring in Professor Madhukar Pai, Canada's Research Chair of Epidemiology and Global Health at McGill University, Dr. Rachna Kucheria, Physician and Epidemiologist, and Dr. Sandeep Budhiraja, Group Medical Director of Max Healthcare. Dr. Pai, to you first. Concerns about the Omicron variant, waning vaccine-induced protection against infection really has highlighted the need for boosters to protect the most vulnerable. Everybody seems to be worried and, you know, naturally talking about whether they should get a booster. Many countries have started giving these booster shots. But what about India? What, according to you, should be the priority in India, given that our large-scale immunization program, you know, still has months to go?
So firstly, there are two issues. Globally, rich nation after rich nation is jumping into boosters for all adults. And that leaves people like me wondering how worse is vaccine inequity going to get globally. As of today, 3.5 billion people in the world are completely unvaccinated. 3.5 billion. 90% of them are in developing countries. So at some level, I think rich countries have completely lost the plot on this. They somehow think that banning travel, closing borders, and boosting themselves is a solution for this pandemic. And they're simply not acting to end this vaccine apartheid. They should have waived the TRIPS IP. They should have handed the technology to many countries, and they have not done that, nor are they donating enough vaccines to COVAX. So that's a big battle that people like me are fighting because we happen to be in countries like North America. But within India, I think I understand the need for boosters and the anxiety in a small proportion of people. For example, frontline healthcare workers who are many months away from their first or second dose, immunocompromised people, I understand. People who have elderly, 70 plus, 60 plus, I understand. But boosters for all adults is simply not backed by data right now. I think the biggest bang for buck for India is to vaccinate the completely unvaccinated. That is the group that absolutely needs to be protected. And the second priority would be people who have taken one dose in India and have failed to complete their full second dose. They should be targeted as well. If at all we're going to boost anyone, I hope India will focus only on the high-risk groups, not all people, and not ignore this massive 40% of Indians who are simply completely unprotected.
But I want to just understand one thing. When you say the first world developed nations are all going in for boosters, it's not, an indulgence, or it's just like, you know, looking out for themselves. Is it counterproductive? Because I want to understand that a vaccine only works if everybody has it. Is this correct to say that as long as there are countries or there are bubbles or, you know, sockets, parts of the world where you are not vaccinated, new variants will emerge there? And given how, you know, the world is flat today, variants will then continue to spread like we're seeing the Omicron variant has from Africa?
I do not think I can put it any simpler than the editorial I wrote with Yodi last week in Science. We have to vaccinate the whole world. That is the only path forward to end this global crisis. And by leaving 3.5 billion people unvaccinated, rich countries are absolutely doing the wrong things by not supporting vaccine equity.
But also not protecting themselves in the process.
It's okay if they want to give boosters. Sorry?
But also not protecting themselves in the process. Counterproductive.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Where do you think the new variants are going to come from? They're going to come from the unvaccinated populations around the world, which is low and middle income countries right now.
Got it. Dr. Budhiraja, double vaccinate against COVID first. That's what experts are saying amidst calls for these booster shots. Where do you stand? Booster versus double vaccinations? What should India do?
So, Sarah, I don't think it is either an or. It has to be both. So if we have adequate production of vaccine, which India has, I think we must concentrate and focus on vaccinating the people who have not been vaccinated, giving the second dose of vaccination to people who have only opted for first vaccine. So I think that's something which is priority number one. And after that, I'm sure we still have enough vaccines left. So we should identify the at-risk population and maybe consider booster in those specific subset population, example, healthcare workers, frontline workers, and elderly and those with comorbidities. But the big question is, how do we motivate or how do we ensure that people who have as yet not taken vaccination do that? I think this scare of potential third wave of Omicron probably would force or, you know, people who are fence sitters will motivate them to take vaccination. I think that's the need of the day. And it has to be a two-edged strategy rather than just one end.
Yeah, I think it certainly has. But, you know, Dr. Kacharia, speaking in Parliament, the health minister had said on Friday that a decision on a booster dose and COVID jabs for children will be taken on the basis of scientific guidance from experts. Everybody's talking about boosters, you know, those who are more susceptible. What about children, especially those under five, who for whom we have no vaccines at all in India? India's not even vaccinating kids.
I guess your question is, what is to come there?
Yeah.
And I think the simple answer is that we will have to wait for the data. Even in developed countries, the vaccines are still for the 5 to 11 age group. They haven't gone below 5. It is a very vulnerable age group, and the science has to be very, very strong for that those you know vaccines to be approved. And thus far, we have seen that it's been very mild in the pediatric population. And so, you know, taking both these in consideration and waiting for more data to emerge and scientific trials in the under five age group, I don't think we can say anything before that.
Dr. Ravi, where do you stand on the fact that we have no vaccines yet for India? I hesitate to say that it's a low priority, but it just doesn't seem to be something the government is looking at. Until now, we've been saying children aren't as susceptible. You don't see serious cases. But as everyone says, we don't know enough about the Omicron variant.
Sarah, I think India has data now, which they have been sitting on quite some time for vaccination in children. I hope that data analysis will be completed soon and vaccine rolled out. Zycovid, which is the world's first DNA vaccine, has been completed. The trials have been promising, and that is something that we should roll out. I understand right now the production is taking place in the first week of January. The vaccine will be rolled out through the government system. The Covaxin trial has been completed in India between 2 and 18 years of age. That's one of the few vaccines globally that has been tried between 2 and 5 as well. The results are being analyzed. I think the expert committee has got back to the manufacturers requesting more data and clarifications. I hope those things will be speeded up so that we can have two pediatric vaccines at least rolled out from 1st January.
All right. Dr. Budhi Raja, you're working every day in hospitals. Today, within a few hours, we've seen India go from 3 confirmed cases to 4 confirmed cases. What are we expecting? What should we expect this week, especially, you know, Dr. Samyu, who are physically working out in the field every day? What are your thoughts? What are you hearing from your community?
So, Sarah, if we talk about what we've seen in the last few months, from June onwards, till almost about 2 weeks back, there were hardly any cases. We were not getting calls. It was very, very erratic, very once in a few days things. But now for the last 5 to 7 days, we are getting calls from patients suspected to be COVID and actually turning out to be COVID. We are doing a lot of teleconsults. We are doing some physical encounters also. We have had patients coming in hospitals. So it seems that of late, last few days, the numbers have slightly trickled up. But if you see the statistics, that's not really very impressive or scary at all. Indian numbers are, pan-India numbers are still under 10,000. Daily, if you see, has been hovering between 20 to 30 cases for the last several weeks. It's just in last 24 hours that we have recorded 54 cases. Now, is that an aberration or is that an indication of some trend which might happen is too early to say. Whether these cases are still Delta or there are Omicron cases here is still yet to be seen. And that debate upon genomic sequencing being done in India, I think genomic sequencing, we are talking too much about it. It's only to identify the strain its transmissibility, its presence in a country. Once it is there, it has to be treated like COVID. Now, in South Africa, they do 20% cases, they do genomic testing. Still, they haven't managed to control the outbreak. So controlling the clinical thing is completely different from epidemiological workup, and both must go hand in hand. It's yet early days, but I think extreme caution is very important. All of us as healthcare partners have to gear up to handle potential increase in patients. But hopefully, this time we are more prepared, better prepared than what we were 6 months back during the Delta wave.
Gautam, you were nodding in agreement there. Would you like to add to that on the role of genomic sequencing going hand in hand with testing?
I think they're both important. I think testing is very important. And I think rapid testing is particularly important. That's something we haven't paid enough attention to. You can just hike up volumes of rapid testing and get much more bang for your buck in that way. And sequencing is important when you have new variants coming in, when you want to sample what's going on in the country in a broad epidemiological sense. But I think testing is really going to be crucial going forward, especially if cases are beginning to rise. There's much that we don't know about Omicron, and I hope that will become clearer in the next few weeks.
In the next few weeks, it really feels like an eternity. Dr. Archana Kocharia, last word to you. Then what does one do as a viewer when we hear all of this news coming in? We hear headlines. You're now going to wake up in the morning to your newspaper seeing 4 cases in India, varying, going across states. What does one tell oneself? What does one need to do to protect oneself and one's loved ones, apart from what the government is doing at a national level?
Absolutely. So I think not panic, but like you said, wake up in the morning, be in touch with the news, be in touch with what's happening globally as well as locally. And I keep saying this as a ground level practicing physician, that each one of us, all our patients, all of the citizens also have a responsibility. If you're seeing symptoms, as best as possible, try and get tested quickly, isolate yourselves, people you've been in contact with. Let's make sure that it's not COVID. A lot of other viruses are also going around. But if you're feeling really unwell, I think locally control as much as you can, get to know the data in your communities, be upfront, be honest, get tested, help those who have less than you, all of the people who are watching this program, most of you have a lot more than others who cannot afford, help them get tested, help them stay away from work and infecting others. These measures we did when the Delta was here, and we did manage to overcome it. And like Dr. Budiraja said, we have to treat it the same way clinically in the way that we did Delta, and we did overcome that. So not to panic, keep one eye on the global scenario, on the news that's coming in, but the other definitely on your own local sort of scenario, and people be responsible for themselves and for those communities around them. I think that's the way we can contain it and not head into another sort of a lockdown situation. So really control it locally and be responsible in your own selves and small communities around you is what would be my takeaway to the viewers watching here today.
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for your time tonight.